something. Oh, 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 yeah, we up to something. Yeah, yeah, we up to something. And we out here. We on the road again. Swerve City Podcast on the road, doing what we do no matter what. If we can't get the guests in the podcast, we go to the guests in this lovely home, which we will say for this is the office.
Yeah, the office.
The office, of Samoa Joe, the legend himself, Ring of Honor television champion, currently legend in this game, 20 years plus. Yes, sir. It is an honor. It is a privilege to be here talking with you like this, rapping with my crew, my whole crew over here, Swerve City Podcast, Montezy Jones right here. We got some news to put out there since the last episode. Okay. We just announced that the Swerve City Podcast will be on the Jericho Cruise in February.
Yes, Jericho Cruise, man.
Nice little party there.
It's going to be lovely. It's going to be awesome. I've never been on a cruise, me personally.
Really?
Yes. So this, of course, I'll be working.
First one's always fun. Yeah. Working cruise is a little rough, but I get it.
But it's going to be awesome. It's a great experience. You know, Jericho Cruise has, like, some very legendary parties, very legendary, like, moments with, like, AEW performing on there. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, like, a lot of people really found their characters, like the Britt Bakers, you know, really came into their own on the Jericho Cruises. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we do something big, may do some musical performances. I'm going to try to work my magic, you know, a little bit, you know. Yeah. Jericho's been on the podcast. He know what it's like.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what you got coming up?
First of all, man, thank you, Chris, for inviting us to come on the show, man, and come on the cruise. It means so much for us after all these years and, well, you 5 years in?
5 years. Five years podcasting.
5 years.
5 years. Damn. Start on a beanbag.
On beanbag, man.
Beanbag with no couch in the living room. Then, on IG Live.
On IG Live.
It was not pretty.
And we muscled through it, man. Yeah. We here, man.
So thank you to all six viewers that were watching at the time.
Yes, yes.
Now we up to the thousands.
Six. I was like, is that kill shot? I was
like, who, what? Turn it off.
Like I said, 5 years, everybody had the same look on their face like, where we been this time? And now, like, they're all shocked about the time equity in that. You know, like damn, five years?
Yeah, a lot of sweat equity, but a lot of miles.
This is it. We made it to a cruise. We made it to a boat.
the house of a legend. OG, a legend. And thank you, brother.
Absolutely, man. Welcome. Glad y'all came by and showed up.
You know? Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think this is beautiful because we don't really see many interviews of you out there like that, especially like recently. No. I'd say you're very, like, you know, to yourself a little bit more. You're, like, protected.
Absolutely.
You know, like, that's a personal thing, that's a personal choice, like, professional.
I think privacy is a commodity now in the modern world, and I think
It's not valued as much.
Well, I think we kind of give it away for free a little bit too easily and stuff. And I'm really big on this, too. I wanted to give anybody who was in my family kind of the choice of whether or not they wanted to be on social media and not kind of just start it off right away and put them out there and, like, put them on blast and stuff. Like, I think that should be a choice. And I feel a lot of youth are being robbed of that choice inadvertently. And I'm trying not to do that with my loved ones. But we'll see.
That's true.
And plus, too, you know. And knowing from being around him, you know, another great, that you guys get asked the same 17 questions all the time in your profession. So I'm pretty sure, you know, you're going to turn a lot of that down. Be like, okay, I don't want to talk about my favorite match for the 15th.
I think that's it. Or hot takes, really. I mean, really,
yeah.
Like, they can't wait to get you on there. Like, so what do you think about this thing you don't really care about? No, I don't really care about it.
I don't. Like, come on, give me some spice. I'm trying to get somebody to plug, you know. Oh, man, so... let's take it back to, you know, like, coming up from Huntington Beach, California.
Mm-hmm.
You from? Born and raised?
For most of my life. Kind of spent a few summers kind of back and forth in Hawaii. I had family out there and stuff. But for the most part, Huntington Beach. And, I mean, it was a cool spot to grow up, you know, especially in the time that I did. You know, like, you know, a lot of different, definitely kind of a melting pot town as far as, like, where I lived, at least, down on Slater Avenue and stuff. And Slater Slums, what's up?
Hey.
But, you know, it's like, it was cool in, like, you know, there's a lot of different music, a lot of local music scene was really, really hot. So you'd hear, like, a lot of local bands kind of popping off, too. It was kind of a mix of hip-hop, a lot of punk, a lot of ska, a lot of reggae. So it was like, you got like a real like kind of wide broad mix of sounds and stuff kind of meshing together. So I mean, it was pretty cool, at least in my case, kind of growing up around there.
Who were some inspirations like that you were looking up to at the time? Like not even just a wrestling standpoint, but like sports, you know, music, movies, like all around.
I think like for us at that time, like Junior Seau was like,
yeah,
was like the yeah, guy. Like because I mean like US, especially for California, you know, like USC guy came out to play for the Chargers and like. I mean, just was the man, you know. I mean, just was just so dominating, so smart on defense. Guy was everywhere, all over the field, and like I think like that was like the first big like he was like Bo Jackson to I know to a lot of Samoans kind of growing up.
That's stuff. True. Like, I like, see
Junior
that.
I was that dude, you know.
Yo, like that was like the era of the linebacker corps. Like that was
yeah,
like
we're, those, we had those really ran the teams. Really like violent and aggressive linebackers that just went out there and cracked heads.
Yeah.
It was a different era, you know. Maybe it wasn't the best for everybody, but it was sure fun to watch, you know.
You play football, right?
A little bit, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, through high school and college and stuff. But, yeah, I my aspirations kind of went quickly when the money ran out. So, you know.
Yeah.
Had to start doing something else.
It shed a different little, you know. Yeah. Like a little passion changes a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I got passion for a lot of things, but if I ain't bringing in the butter, man, yeah. I mean, what are we
but
doing?
I also got passion for rent. So.
was it like a little hard growing up, a little difficult? Or were you just like, parents were there?
Parents were there, you know, yeah, real strong family, you know, my mom and my pops. Real unique situation, you know, I grew up basically in a traveling show. You know, my parents ran a big Polynesian dance troupe. My brother still runs it to this day.
Wow.
With all his sons and daughters working for it. I very much sympathize with them. But so, yeah, I kind of grew up doing that from basically was performing full time from probably when I was 5 years old up until, you know, my early 20s when I started transitioning into wrestling.
Yeah, so you was, like, already had the performer blood in you, man.
Just a lot of time on stage, man. Just, like you know, we did a high volume of shows. We had some regular gigs during the week where we do two or three shows a night. And then on the weekends, we probably have two or three more shows. A lot of international tours. And this is all kind of before, you know, I really was, like, 16 or 17, you know.
So
it was cool, though, man. You know, my folks were, like, they had a good way of... You know, like, they didn't believe in other people raising their kids, so they just put us to work and kept us around them all the time. So, I guess it worked out.
I kind of missed that a little bit. Like kids were active.
Yeah.
You had to be in something.
Yeah.
You know, like, now, a lot of technology is raising children
today
in the media.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, we were the media. You had to create your media.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird with my sons because, like, you know, at their age now, man, I already had 2-3 jobs. Like, you know, I was already making money. You know, I think I filed taxes at like 16 or 14 or something like that. Like, it was wild. So
I went through it, so you don't have to go through it.
Yeah, yeah.
You
know? But at the same time, like, but y'all should really get a job. No.
My feelings wouldn't be too hurt.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
I wouldn't feel failed as a parent if you were just working a little bit.
Especially, like, sometimes they sit too comfortable on the furniture. It just bugged me, you know? Like, oh, thanks, Dad. This is
yeah.
That's a job, man. Yeah. Too comfortable on the furniture.
Well, you got about 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. Why is your leg draped over the arm like that? That's gross.
Yeah.
Close your legs. Sit upright.
like one
couch.
One false, like, little thing of the etiquette. Throw a parent. Ooh, you be like, hold up. I got a question. I got a question about the ethics that we've been going through over here. Like, no.
My son hit me with the, can you make these crispy nuggets, these chicken nuggets crispier, Dad?
Ooh. He said.
What?
I grew up on soggy.
I'm like, bro, you better eat what I give you, bro. Yeah.
Bro. You know, those Tyson chicken blues. And sometimes she even take them out the freezer and take them apart. She just left them stuck together. It's real gross in between there, son. I pulled them apart for you.
There's still icicles in this mug.
We come from the days.
It's still crispy.
Yeah. Like. I'm telling you, though, we come from the days where, like, if you did not eat what was on the table, you was not eating, bro. Just you was dead. Not eating.
The dead stare. Hey, can I get this reheated?
Bro, what was a meal you couldn't stand getting as a kid? Like, I hated, like, every time, for some reason, for me, it was like the filet fish, like the same nugget thing, but it was fish.
So I
hated it.
I was like, my mom, she was a great cook, so it wasn't bad. But my pops, sometimes
it's always the dad.
Sometimes he'd be tasked with making us like yeah. lunch or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And we just knew like, oh no. And I love my dad, and he rest his soul. He's a great man. But yeah, man, he had a habit of making tuna fish sandwich. All right, that's fine, tuna fish sandwich. Okay, we can deal with that. But he wouldn't drain the tuna, man. He just it'd be like a soup. And he put on Wonder Bread, and then he'd like serve it to you, and he said, "You gonna eat it?" And you'd be like, "And it was just rough, man. It was a soup, soft tuna sandwich, soup man. Sandwich, and it was so bad, it
tuna
was so
soup
bad.
Sandwich."
And yeah, and then if you didn't eat it, he'd be like, "Oh, you like our food? You don't like this or that?" It just got bad.
Lord,
oh man, what's something moms like grandmas? Yo, would these be like pot roast, like the big. Ham hock.
Oh, you didn't like that?
I never ate that stuff.
I would tear that up.
Nah.
That was my man.
Big ham hock just...
With a knuckle on it?
Yes. And it took forever to cook.
The hard knuckle?
I don't like this. And she meant like cabbage with it. I'd be like, cabbage? Oh,
it is good. The problem is your first... It is good. The problem is your first exposure is usually your uncle and he just like murdering the knuckle or so just like it's cracking and you're just like,
That has been experience of seeing somebody else eat it.
Yeah.
Has turned me off of ever wanting it. Like that's happened to me before.
Well, you got to get the meat off the bone, grandson. And you got, I don't put all this work.
Yeah.
Cabbage soggy. Love it, grandson.
Yeah. Cabbage soggy.
I just couldn't do it, dog. I would, and it would be like every Thursday, right before school night, too. Like right before Friday on the good day.
Just hungry going into your quiz. You know? Didn't need anything.
Like no brain food, bro. It's all arthritis food.
I never ate it, man. I'm like, I'm like a PB&J, bro.
What was your first exposure to pro wrestling?
A lot of it was just, I think, Saturday morning wrestling and stuff. Because we would have practice on Saturdays which with the group, but then it would be over in the morning. Then right then, that would be the only time I could watch TV was after practice was done. And I think wrestling would be coming right on Superstars or Saturday. I think it was Saturday morning was the other one. Switched out a couple times, but it was so yeah, that was like the first exposure. And then like my pops actually had knew several wrestlers just through show business, and he worked at the airline LAX, so he kind of was like a travel expert to a lot of the like Samoan cats who would come into LA and stuff. So yeah, I mean, he loved it. I loved it. It was one of the few things that we enjoyed together that we could watch together on TV. So I mean, that was kind of my first real exposure to it was just kind of Saturday mornings watching with my pop.
Oh, okay. Who are you like you say he had a relationship with a lot of the wrestlers and stuff. Who would you say like someone that you like really gravitated to personally and like it's like not watching on TV but like you was like, okay, this person like is here in front of me. Like I interact with him and stuff, you know.
So all his buddies were mostly indie guys. Yeah. But mostly indie Samoan guys around the Southern California area. But I remember when he was in Hawaii, like he worked at a gym where Lord James Blair worked and a lot of the guys would come in and work out and, you know, he'd be a trainer there and stuff when he was younger. So that was kind of his main connection was in Hawaii. But me growing up and kind of watching guys, I was always a big Arn Anderson fan. I've always said that. Mm-hmm. I just liked the way Arn carried himself and, you know, it was kind of, you know, the enforcer and he was always the muscle guy and, you know, Great moveset, really crisp and clean when he snapped through things.
Yeah.
So I think that was kind of the first guy I really, really dug. And then, I mean, there was several after that. Yeah.
I feel like you take a lot from him, just like you said, like he just had the presence before he even get in the ring, before he does anything, gets physical.
Mm-hmm.
He just carried himself a certain way. And that's like, for me, like that's a Samoa Joe just stamp mantra for like years.
Like, I think it's important. I think, like, you know, presence and poise and posture and how you project yourself obviously is huge in what we do. But, you know, I when you look at the best, I mean, like, you know, I was fortunate enough when I started my career, I started in 01 and working with Shinya Hashimoto and just watching him out on these small house shows in the Japanese countryside and just seeing how, you know, he'd captivate these people and just presence and, you know, seeing a guy who was very, very jovial, sweet, like awesome dude, you know, behind the scenes just turned into this like world destroyer whenever he got in the ring. So watching that transformation definitely helped me realize like how incredibly important just poise, posture, and how you, you know, portray yourself is in the public light.
That's like one of the biggest arts, I think, that it's something you can't teach. You just it's a light bulb that goes off, or you don't get it at all. Mm-hmm. It's just like the fact of like timing on those things, and just like truly like understanding the perspective of what you're giving off. Is what I've started realizing and learning. Just like the like, it's not about my perspective, it's about the person's perspective, how they're going to see this. Mm-hmm. And I kind of got to put myself in their shoes, yep, in their position. Like, what would fear me? What would I fear? What would, like, intimidate me, mm-hmm, if I was sitting there watching my person go out or seeing them on the screen and stuff? Because now what we're doing, like, with AEW, like, in Japan, it's a little different because it's a lot of just live, mm-hmm, like, live to the audience. AEW, we have cameras and, yep, like, promoing and, like, social media and road twos and, mm-hmm, all this other stuff. There's so many different ways to portray yourself and project it to the audience. And I think that's something that's, like, really tough to teach. That's probably the hardest thing to teach in this in the game today. Would you say so?
I'd agree with that. But, I mean, but I think that kind of goes with a lot of time to talk about the intangible things, sure, about certain people. And, you know, a lot of it. And I think I say the biggest thing when it comes to portraying yourself in a certain way is that you gotta believe it. You know, you gotta mm-hmm, you gotta really, really have a deeply held belief that, you know, what you're portraying is authentic, and what you know, how you feel and what you're emoting is those things too, and it should feel comfortable, and you should be able to kind of, you know, slip into it. At least for me, you know, everybody kind of, yeah, has their own process. And
what
stuff,
is something that you might have learned from back then, like your early beginnings, that you even take, like, maybe something a trainer taught you, or something that you've learned, even from your own experience, that you take now in your career as you are now OG in the game? What is something you've learned from back then that sticks with you?
I think the biggest thing is, you know, understanding that time moves differently to the audience than it does to you.
Very true.
In the ring. And I think it's something that some people have a hard time with because, you know, in your mind, when you're out there, you know, your senses are heightened and you're amped up and your blood's pumping, you're feeling, mm-hmm, the charge from the crowd, you're already getting into it, and you're going, and you know, what is lightning fast almost seems slow at times. You know, it's unusual, and it's just learning that you know, that tracks differently to the observer who's watching it and is not in a heightened state of alertness. It's just in a heightened state of just watching, observing what you're doing. So just little things like that, understanding, you know, reading your crowd, you know, kind of feeling where they're at certain points, and you know, knowing when to put on the gas, when to pull back a little bit. I mean, these are all kind of things that those repetitions kind of help with. And you know, the more opportunities you get to be in front of those types of crowds where you can gauge that kind of response, usually the better off you end up being.
Who's an artist that you can, like, kind of relate to that same type of psychology? They just, like, they had timing and, like, they just had a presence on stage, even in, like, on this and hearing their music. They just had a presence in their voice.
That is, like, that they just kind of have it, like, in that.
Yeah.
And it's a great question. I would say if the first person that comes to mind to me, it would be, like, Dr. Dre was always great with that. Mm-hmm. I think Dre was always great with timing. And even though, you know, you hear stuff about music never coming out with him, but when he was putting out music, everything was always a timing thing. Whether it was NWA, his own stuff, everything was always a perfect timing. Snoop was great with that too. They always had, Snoop was more active, but they just have it on the new side, and I will finally give it up. Because I just never watched it, but Tyler has that.
Yep.
It's perfect with Tyler. Tyler, the creator, has that perfect. Like, when he always drops and always comes out, it's very calculated. You could tell the details are very important with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very detailed.
I take a lot from him in that sense, too.
Now that I'm paying attention, you have me paying attention.
Yeah.
I see what it motivates you. I see it.
Yeah.
I see what it is.
For me, like, I'll go old school with it. I feel like every time Punisher, Big Pun, hopped on something, I feel like the whole rest of the track moved out of the way for mm-hmm. him to just, boom, here he is. Like, that, like, on a feature, on his own songs, like, he just had, like, the
the voice control and then the power behind that, mm-hmm. which is really hard to do.
Yeah.
To like just come in hard and then like still flow effortlessly.
Yeah.
Music wise, that was like the guy.
I think like honestly, one of the best live hip hop performances I think I've ever seen in my life was Busta Rhymes.
I was about to say that. And like, Prime Busta is what he's talking about too.
Yeah, Prime, like, well, I mean, I'm gonna say Busta. I don't know, Prime, but you know, like,
still to this day,
like, when you talk about a guy who gets in front of a crowd and has a tight killer stage act that is polished and practiced, and hits, and like, and everything spot on, sharp. I mean, sharp. Super. Like, which you know is something I appreciate, man. I feel like. A lot of hip hop acts in the past, you know, they had real sharp acts where they come through, and as time's gone on, and they're just kind of singing over the track, playing in the background, and crowd work, it's kind of alleviated a bit. But Busta, man, I've seen some performances live where I've just been like, this is out of this. I mean, just everything hitting everything, every note, you know, everybody coming in the improvs, everything just perfect, and just I mean, just
him and Spiff Star have. The greatest live shows,
and they fill each other so well.
Back to back. You don't like some people. You don't realize how much they got in the tank until you see them live.
Yeah,
like this dude got about 40.
Like he gets through four songs. You're like, you why are you not passed out? You know, like, dude, I'm tired.
Wearing heavy listening. Jewelry and big jackets.
Big jackets.
I'm like, yo, we dress a little lighter nowadays, but they, you know, they still heavy. Heavy.
Heavy down. You still got puffy jackets. I've seen them, bro.
And all five songs is like... Every song is
like,
dude, you don't stop, bro.
Then this, like, the power in those guys, man, is just different. Like, but those guys, they came up in an era they had to perform to make money.
Yeah.
You're like, performing was the
different,
art.
Different hustle, different focus on different things. You know?
Yeah, so that they had to work on a different skill than kind of the artist today.
Yeah, I'm not like a hater, like, just saying, I like it. You know? Yeah. I'm not saying if you don't do it, you trash. I'm just it's saying, different. I like it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I enjoy things. You can enjoy things. Man, let's talk about the Ring of Honor era, the golden era of this Ring of Honor, like, where is y'all, everybody... That you were like on the roster with was just all were killers. You is like you, Aries, Low Key, Kenta coming over, man. Like the stiff competition with Brian Danielson, Claudio, all those guys. Like what was motivating that locker room to just create a whole new era, a whole new style, a breed of wrestling that a lot of hell like is very mainstream now. You know, the underground is now the mainstream.
I mean, well, the main thing I think is just there's nowhere else to work. Like,
things change when you get hungry, bro.
Yeah, I love to romanticize it and be like, well, we came together and we just said, guys, we're going to change the world. Nah, we're like, hey, they paying, right? All right, cool.
But you ain't got to hit that hard, like, bro.
Yeah, wow.
Shout out Christopher Daniels.
Shout out Christopher Daniels. Hey, listen, Christopher Daniels.
Yes.
Let me tell you. You know, I learned to make money in independent wrestling. I just followed the Christopher Daniels money. I told him that. I looked at every promoter that fly him in. I realized, well, they fly him in. I can get him fly me in. You know, now that's not how I started out. It said, well, these are the promoters that pay for a flight. That's what I knew. I knew, all right, they'll pay for a flight, but. Yeah, I mean that because he was one of the few guys at the time. I mean that's how it was back then. I mean like Chris Daniels when I started out was one of the few guys in the country who was being consistently flown out of state.
Yeah,
which was like what flown out of state to work for independent places. Wow. Yeah. So it was like, you know, for unless you got picked up by WWE, WCW was waiting on its way out and actually closed pretty much like my first year in, and you know ECW was.
Was in flux.
It was in flux, and they were in so much financial trouble. They were on kind of a hiring freeze too, and you know there just weren't a lot of places to really work, and where it was kind of like a big deal, and there was a little bit of buzz going on, and Ring of Honor was one of those few places, and I think really you know they just
you coming from LA all the way to Philly, doing shows too,
and like I think what just basically that it started with the King of Indies tournament. You know, Gabe I think will say that like. He kind of got the idea from watching that, and then he realized, oh, there's enough kind of cool indie guys that we can put together a promotion in the Northeast. Obviously, Northeast was still hungry for, you know, more wrestling and stuff, and especially Philly. And you know, just that's kind of how it all came together. And like I said, you know, these were the same guys I was seeing booked everywhere anyways. You know, I was seeing Brian everywhere. I was seeing Lowkey everywhere. I was seeing AJ everywhere. So it was like we all kind of knew each other going in because we were all getting booked, you know, nationally.
Right.
So it's like, you know, when Ring of Honor came together, it was like, oh, cool. It was like we finally have kind of a consistent place. We're all kind of in the same place together.
It was like a time period like this. You don't see like that many of hybrid style talents like come together at one time.
Well, and I think a lot of it too was guys were really trying to make a bid for Japan, which was still a really viable.
Yep.
Right. That was like a consistent career option at the time. And it kind of, you know, I guess it is, but you know, it got worse during that time too. There was a slump in business over there around that same period of time. And, you know, just Ring of Honor was a great place for you to kind of like really build your repertoire, build your resume, you know, get some good matches and you know, it was, the shows did well and it paid decent. It was a cool thing. And like all the guys were hungry and like wanted to put on like an awesome show. You know, it was like, it was a consensus in the locker room. Hey, let's go out there and have a great show. Like let's blow this thing out and have a blast. And
when,
you know,
when did you feel like it got to a point where you could, this could be a consistent thing? Like instead of like just spot shows here every once in a while, like this could be like
kind of when it did. You know, like yeah, it's like homegrown, because like we were just there and it just kind of just kept evolving. And they kept adding more shows, and it happened pretty fast. It happened pretty quickly. You know, like where you
Brian,
know
what year you think?
2002 I mean, don't. There's some guy who right now is watching this kid. I'll tell you exactly. Well, you know, like,
bam. I look at everything towards the music. I'm like, well, get rich or die trying.
Yeah. it was that whole time was such a whirlwind. I couldn't even tell you what years when they started and when they stopped. And I mean, that's true. With a relatively sober head, you know.
Right.
Oh man, it was just so cool because like for me, like those were the tapes I was like I was being introduced to, like, and I was like. I started in 07, 08, really, and I was getting the 02, 03 tapes to learn from, but it was like, man, I'm not seeing this anywhere else. Why was I not seeing this style of these, like, athletes on television on a weekly basis? That was, like, really, like, that was mind-blowing to me, and I think that was that made it so much more special because it wasn't given out.
Yeah, it was, well, and that was kind of the thing was, you know, ROH did a really great job of, like, really monetizing their fan base and, like, you know, understanding. It's kind of like mixtapes. You know what I mean? It's a lot like mixtapes, actually, you know, where it's just, you know, you may not do, you know, you may not do 2 million records. You may do 200,000, but you do 200,000 at 100% profit. You know what I mean? So that's kind of, you know, the ROH model was very much a mixtape type of model in that sense where it's like, we may do fewer units, but, you know, we're going to...
You get to pocket all that.
Because they're doing everything in-house. Yeah. So it's like, it was... That's why... That was the base of the success, really, was just... It was lean and clean at the time, for especially for the size venues we were doing and the size of the fan base that we had.
So now... I always transfer it to music. So now that you're like... Let's say you're like an executive now. You've been doing this a long time. And it's also like finding new talent as well. For when it comes to you now or the stage you're in, you've been a veteran, you've been doing it a long time. If you could look back to yourself, 01, 02, what advice would you give yourself back then? If you could just have a conversation with, like, what would you say?
I probably would have embraced probably social media and YouTube and stuff a little bit more and a little differently, like how to, you know, an approach and a plan worked out. I think that's what everybody would say, really. I mean, I don't think it's, I don't think it's some, you know, I think if you said, man, if I could start back and then, you know, I'd be the guy they're talking about, you know.
Right.
Jake Paul, I'm like, you see my YouTube channel.
Right.
I'd
be bungee jumping too.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Doing all the pranks before they do all the challenges.
Yeah.
You'd be out there the day before the ice bucket. Hey, ice bucket challenge. Bah. You know?
Dude, yo, that's funny as hell, bro. That's hilarious.
But, I think as far as from like a wrestling standpoint and a content standpoint, like understanding where content was going to go, I think if you were, like, if you knew what was up a couple years ahead of time, man, you could position things to.
Oh, so the legacy has already been set. Now we're seeing like the lineage of the Ring of Honor on TV now, and we're still trying to move forward to get that on its own television product, mm-hmm. Its own programming and stuff. Currently, ROH TV champion mm-hmm. and stuff. Like, do you feel like in today's age, legacies are respected as much by the media, like social platforms and fan bases? Because I think a lot of people take for granted, like, everything that has come with building a Ring of Honor and building the talent that they see today and the styles that we talk about. That's just, like, you see it every week now on, like, on WWE. You see it on AEW. You see it on Impact. You know, you see that style. Do you think, like, the legacy is respected as much?
Yes, because it's like, and I've said this before, I think Ring of Honor has its fingerprints all over the industry, especially the top mm-hmm. of the industry and stuff. And I think it does garner the respect it's deserved, because, you know, it's kind of an undeniable respect. I mean, you know, you look at the guys who are probably at the top of this industry, you know, a lot of them probably passed through ROH. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that in and of itself is kind of telling. And, you know, as far as like legacy and do I feel legacies are respected as much or whatever? I mean, that's in the hands of the fan. You know, like, let's just leave it there. Let's not worry about it. Mm. If a fan thinks you legendary, then awesome. If he don't, then cool. Like, it shouldn't be reprimanded because he thinks a certain way. I mean, that should be a genuine. That should be something genuine that somebody feels about you. It shouldn't be something that's just kind of pontificated to them. This man is a legend. Like,
right?
What are you talking about? I just met him. I don't really, you know. Like, he's legendary to me.
Throw them roses down before his feet.
Yeah,
he walks
yeah,
in,
yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Like,
nah.
Do you feel like that? And the reason why that I bring that question up sometimes to people when I think about it is because it seems like in wrestling, like when you're done, it's kind of like that's when you really get your roses in a way, mm-hmm. autographs. And you guys get them now, too, because you guys do it now, too. So you guys get it while you're doing it. Mm-hmm. And kind of when it ends, you guys obviously can do signings when you want to do them. It's like, it seems like in music or other forms of entertainment, it depends on what you do, the threshold is kind of lower or higher, depending on what career choice you take. Because it seems like in music sometimes, you get some people get it, and like you said, some people don't. Mm-hmm. And even in the form of films, actors, actresses, mm-hmm. or great athletes. Some great athletes have great numbers. Numbers are great, but it's just something that sometimes they're overlooked. And then somebody who might not have the numbers, but they might have more Super Bowl rings.
Hell, I just did it. I made fun of Matt Ryan.
Yeah,
like
he's
great. I'm like, man, you'd be a little rough on Matt.
I was a little rough on him, but he's like a top like 15 quarterback of all time.
Like technically, technically, if you go by the numbers, Shady McCoy has a Hall of Fame argument. If you go by numbers, but is the impact the same as Emmitt Smith or Barry Sanders? No, but he had a 13-year career and had a lot of 1,000-yard seasons and touchdowns.
Like we make fun of Le'Veon Bell boxing, but like, dude, that was like a all-time running back Steelers career.
Right.
You
know? So
like, that's why, like, I always, like, play with, like, I always just pay attention to those kind of things of, like, do we respect legacies as much as, like, you know, like, as we should? Do we give the flowers when they're, you know, when they're gone?
I think legacy can be kind of a curse.
Mm. Oh.
Talk about it.
Well, I mean, because you have to support a legacy. Legacies don't just kind of stand on their own. You know what I mean? So, I mean, really. I mean, it needs support, and, like, it's tough, man, especially if you're still living, you know?
And active. And active in it, too.
I mean, you know, this guy can still mess up. We sure we'll be giving him, about legacy or whatever?
I'm like, yo, he did
that. Yeah, yeah.
Like a Ben Roethlisberger is like, no, he's, like, one of the greatest of all time.
For sure. But, like, my thing is, like, I think you should strive to be good at what you do and produce good works and things that you feel you enjoy and that, you know, your audience will enjoy, and really worry less about whether, you know, people revere what you've done. I think you get too caught up in that, and then you start getting, like, real sensitive and about, you know, and which is fine, but at the same time, it's like
you lose
a lot of that artistic connection. You lose a lot of your ability for your work to be seen and interpreted and heard in maybe ways you may not like, but it may be fucking awesome. You know what I mean? Maybe that may be the way that it's like, oh shit, it just hits a certain, it may hit different than what you think.
Right.
So I don't know. I think when you worry about legacy and stuff, you're really limiting the artistic ability of the things that you put out in the world.
Teach me. I need to hear this. I battle it.
I get petty.
No, I understand because it's especially in creative endeavors. I mean, that's your heart, that's your life, that's your work, that's stuff that's you're passionate about, that comes from your inside. You want people to fuck with it and love it as much as you love it. But if they don't love it, you're torching yourself trying to worry about how somebody feels about some shit that you can never affect how they feel about it.
Right.
That's how they feel about it.
Yep.
And it's like, when you're suffering, making yourself suffer over that, there's a lot of suffering in this world. You don't need to add any of your own personal suffering on top.
Ain't never lied.
What about the inverse of that?
Yeah.
them trying to make you suffer for how they feel about, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's where when they throw the mirror on you, it's like, no, you're wrong. The performer is wrong because you should be honestly respecting their opinion on it because they're the consumer.
No, absolutely. And the entitlement. There needs to be a meeting. There needs to be a meeting of the two of somewhere.
That's
between.
A lot of people.
A lot of people in that transaction.
Yeah, that's a lot of numbers. I don't think there's a boardroom big enough for this, bro.
Shows that friend you call, you start talking to him, he'll listen to you for 10 minutes. He's like, man, shut your ass.
I got the numbers. I got the stats. I got everything laid out.
So said this.
Hey, I always tell people it's called show business. Everybody loves the show, but boy, you better get your business right. Otherwise, you will not be showing much to anybody anytime soon.
I'm on the other side of that. I'm like, yo, how about you show me?
Yeah. Show me some business.
I've been doing this for a while. I think I figured it out pretty well, but apparently I'm doing it all wrong. But judging on this, I'm like, okay, you do it.
Yeah.
Show me.
Is there anything that, and this is digging a little deeper this is, as far as character work, is there anything that maybe in your career that, because you obviously have gotten over that part. That part's like, whatever. But is there anything that you do struggle with, maybe to this day, that you might have to sit back and make you think, it's something that will make you think like that or make you maybe not overreact, but say, damn, I need to still work on this part of it.
Nothing overarching, but sometimes I'll see just some stupid shit. You suck or blah, blah, blah. Somebody just totally talking about some shit, some shit happened, some fake timeline they've made up in their head about when I was here and when this happened and when that happened. And I was like, what the fuck? And I want to say some shit, but I'm like, why do you even care whether this cat's timetable's right? He just made this shit up. he just trying to talk some shit. He's just making up facts to talk some shit. Just let the brother make up some shit. You need to check him on it.
Fun. That reminds me of the new meme now with the LeBron lying.
Oh, it's the best. Oh, my
God.
I'm like,
oh my God, I love it.
So I'm still new to it because I'm still trying to catch up on the whole thing. But I'm like, okay, even if say it is true, or actually say. Some of his stuff is just astronomically way out of the picture. Like, no, there's no way that's real. It's LeBron. It could be real.
Yeah.
It could be real. But it's other people talking about this man's career.
Guys, first off, LeBron is the skipper of the greatest basketball franchise in the history of the NBA, the Los Angeles Lakers. Really appreciate y'all. Speak a little bit more respectfully about the cap. You know what I mean? He can't help it. Having a rough year.
Rough. A rustier.
When LeBron 2-8 and he don't care. He done. He's like,
you know what? I'm going to say some bullshit. Let's see how it travels.
We ain't got no shooters. I'm getting my 25.
Yeah.
I mean, at this stage of his career, I'm going to say some lies and see how it travels and see if y'all catch up to it. I'm going to see what happens.
Yeah, man, I was in the studio when Pastor Cavassier came out.
I was there.
I was about 7. But I tell you, it was.
I was the first.
You know that part where in the middle roll. That's me.
Yeah, that's
me. Yeah, I grabbed Pharrell's mouth. Yeah. I was like, "Shut up, real quick."
Yeah, the pager and freaking Bow Wow Sierra video.
Yeah,
I gave him the pager. It's two way.
Okay.
I told him to write the message on Excel spreadsheet on the phone. That was me. Hey, I'm a billionaire
freaking basketball player, I'm going to say some lies and see if y'all catch up. Just because I'm bored.
Like, yeah, I was at St. Vincent, St. Mary's, and everybody was spinning
towels.
Spinning their shirts. Yeah. And I was sitting next to Petey Pablo.
Yeah.
And I was
his name was just... Joseph Pablo. Yeah, I said, yo, you know it's a great name, Petey, bro. Yeah, yeah.
Man, they're spinning that shirt like a helicopter.
Yeah.
What? You know what?
Next thing you know.
And then I was like, hey, dog, where you from again? Hey, hold on real quick. Where you from?
Wake Forest. Yeah. Like, wait a minute.
That's funny.
Yeah, I was there at them college parties. Wait, hold on. Dog, there's so much fun to be had with this stuff. But I don't man, like... AEW is coming up on Full Gear.
Yep.
This week. You did some dirty things.
I did, didn't I? But did I really? I mean, did I really do something that
I'm
dirty?
I'm in the same boat with you, bro. Why are they questioning our ethics,
why is it,
man?
When somebody comes around and talks real reckless?
Real reckless.
And
man.
I believe him. See, that's the problem. I believe people. Other people don't believe people. Some people get in people's face and say, oh, I'm going to whip your ass. I'm going to beat you up. I'm going to kill you. Oh, you suck. I'm going to do it. And see, you say that to other people, they don't believe you. They don't do nothing because it's just look at you. Like, oh, I guess, okay, you
but
must not be
you're
real.
The
yeah, because oh. I'm taking things for face value, right. You know?
Bro, they rap to me.
Yeah, they rap to you. Disrespect. And then you'll come here and say, I want to take all the belts. I mean, I knew where we were going. We just got there a little quicker. I'm sorry, I accelerated the schedule.
You said it. We misunderstood people, man.
Misunderstood.
And in Jersey, at Full Gear,
yeah,
we're going to make y'all understand.
Sometimes I wish the rest had body cams so we could just see from my point of view what's really happening out there. Because it's like, real different. You should have heard the shit under his breath he was saying over his shoulder.
They don't know what that happens off camera.
No, they don't.
It could have been brewing for like weeks. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like his neck was looking real delicious, so we had to just go up
delicious.
And, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to shut it down, you know.
I respect it, man.
He had bad thoughts, so, you know, he didn't need to think no more. I mean, that's how that works. Right?
Let me cut off the blood of that thinking process.
Yeah, you had evil, evil thoughts. So I was just trying to save you from them.
So, hey, so I want to ask you this question, right? So you have... So in wrestling, dream tag team, seeing a lot of people love seeing Swerve and Keith Lee together, you and Wardlow at the time. But I want to ask you this. I want to make you think. Hopefully, you don't have the answer to this, even though you're a hip-hop head, so you probably already do. Give me your three hip-hop albums, right? Because, you know, Drake and 21 Savage just dropped a project. Give me your three collab projects. They're not a group, but two artists that can come together and make an album. Three different collaborations. They're not a group, though. Like, Drake and 21 is not a group. They just came together. Give me three different units.
Okay, Meth and Red.
Okay.
Right, not a group.
Technically not, but they became one. They count, though.
But
they're not a group.
They weren't at first.
They weren't at first. They weren't at first. They were just friends.
Yeah.
Right.
You already said Drake and Future? I mean, they...
Oh no! That, he said Drake and
21 Savage. They dropped the album last week, so
yeah.
You Drake, yeah, Drake and Future, they have one album. Yeah, they're
It's hot.
Yeah.
Who else? I'll take one song from that album.
I mean, Webby and Boozy.
They count.
Wayne and Birdman.
Wayne and Birdman.
Yeah, they ain't a group, right? Yeah. Technically, they're not a group.
You know what? Yeah. Nobody gonna say it. I'm gonna put it out there, man. Like, yo, show some respect to Chris Brown and Tyga. They drop some heaters every summer, yo.
Okay.
You mean Chris dropped the heaters and Tyga just put his verse in there?
Yeah.
However you want to discuss it, however you want to wave it.
I need a chorus.
The song was fire.
Yo, shout out Shad Moss and Omarion dropping their little collab album.
That ran the whole summer when they came.
Did it not? I'm just talking about summer hits. These are not all time.
Bow Wow and Omarion ran that whole summer, bro. Those are the days, bro.
I can't wait for Shad Moss and Jay Cargo to drop their collab album soon.
This is gonna be really, really good. I heard.
Will it be?
Yo, I'm sure.
So who's
we got the best producers on it?
Oh shit! <Yeah. laughs> So is there anybody in wrestling like that for you? Like anybody like a homie?
Two people that just come together and it's just fire.
I mean,
somebody that you like.
Somebody that I like. I mean, no. Not like that.
Why you shrink the list like that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, guess that question is going nowhere.
I'm trying to think of like in wrestling, that I like seeing together.
Yeah.
when they come together?
Sting and Generico.
Yeah, they're always fun. They're always fun. Fire. They're always fun.
Always fire. That's like right off the top for me.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I've just seen these cats. Like, it's... I've seen too many of these guys wrestle each other, man.
Yeah. He's like, you know, he all right.
Yeah.
He's like, cool.
I've already seen all these play out to the logical end.
Right.
So what are we really talking about? Yeah. Where are we really going? Are you cinema guy? Movies? Going to movies? Study movies? Much?
I dig films. I mean, I haven't been to the movies in like a year, but yeah. Oh.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I just checked out that Wakanda Forever.
What'd you think?
Oh, hot take.
Guess who's not coming to the barbecue? This cat over here.
They told a great story. Not just to me. Like,
This is where I'm going.
Yo, I will say, like, it was a good film. I just, it wasn't as good as Black
Everybody's
Panther.
Everybody's going to click the teeth at you.
Oh, okay. The last three, I'm on a roll. The last two podcasts, I've been getting like a lot of Fightful Select like news out of them. So this might be another one, guys. And nobody else is talking. So it's just me. Okay, cool. It was cool. It just wasn't better than Black Panther for many reasons.
I mean,
it didn't have the impactful punch that I wanted because we're in like phase four. We've seen so many
but
Marvel movies.
To be fair, Black Panther was a great first. I mean,
it was excellent to me.
Like, I mean, it's hard.
It's like, very hard.
Yeah, it's
like,
hard to beat.
I will not. It will not. I'm not like gonna like punish it for like. Mm-hmm. Of course, it went through rewrites. It had a whole big just missing part of the movie that they had to like work around, and I thought they did that well. Mm-hmm. But it still didn't impact the punch that it needed to for me. But it was still a solid film.
What'd you think?
I kind of feel that way, kind of like how you feel about tag team partners.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, I saw it, my son's like, and I'm sitting here just like. I'm like, is it over? Are we done?
Yeah, when you hit that easy rest.
Are we done?
No, that's great.
I did.
That's great. Good.
I saw 96% of it. You know, I felt like it was just, it could have waited, you know, even.
You know what? I wouldn't be mad if they did, like, wait another year.
Give it a little minute, you know what I mean?
It did feel kind of like production rush, like, we got to get this out.
Give it a second. Like, let it.
These
like,
contracts about to be up. We got to go.
Yeah, we got to get this in line before Quantumania.
I know you missed the man, and I miss him too, shout Chad. God bless.
Man, it was grieving in that.
But
video.
It felt like that's what, he was sick. Well, he really was sick. Well, damn. Like, we getting there. Okay, we doing this.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole movie was based on. Like, Angela Bassett did a great job when she
killed
us. And one critique I will say, now that I'm getting to my movie thing, thanks to these guys, because I'll be out the conversation. I need to get involved, so I'm watching.
Yeah, you
now.
Be the guy now this time.
I will say that the plot was all, like, the stories was all over the place. Like, one second, I forgot the chick's name, the scientist.
Cheery?
She was in one part. And the next thing they're cutting over to the villain, and then they're cutting over here and there. It's like, not a lot of character development. I wish they, even though the movie was 2 hours and 45 minutes, I wish they took a little bit more time in the developing like these characters. M'Baku was weak. That's my boy. He was weak.
Beat up the Black Panther.
Beat up the Black Panther. Now you see the little avatar dude come out the water. He don't know what to damn do. And he's weak as hell, getting his ass whipped. And I'm just like... You know what? My son, he was like, he's weak in this movie. I said, yes, he is. But he's trash.
Don't
say
him. Family Barrel. Daddy, he's weak. I know.
My one dude I liked. And
learn
like,
from this, son.
Then they had to find a way to get Michael B. Jordan in the movie. They had to find a way to get him in.
No. I was okay with that. That was my favorite part of the movie to me.
You know, we don't need Kevin Hart in Marvel movies, but I'll shut up.
It's coming.
It's coming, yeah.
Oh, it's coming.
Huh? You seen it yet? You haven't seen it?
No, he hasn't seen it. I was kind of avoiding that because of him, but yeah, everybody, he's back.
He's in it.
Kinda.
I guess.
As Creed, that'd be dope.
He was cut up like Creed. You can tell he just got done shooting Creed the other day because he was cut.
Boy. They were in the same studio lot. He's like,
come on and put these fake dreads on real quick. Go and do your part.
We don't got the script. I don't need it. I got it. What we doing? I found out that you just did some, you know. Did your acting chops dipped into the acting scenes a little bit?
Oh, okay. Let's talk about it.
I don't know how much NDA
that you can say.
No, yeah. So, Twisted Metal for Peacock.
Okay. Oh, shit.
That's what I was going to ask. Where can we find this, man? When's it coming out?
Coming out, I can't say. Okay. Yeah, because I think I would get in trouble for that.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, very careful.
I'm pretty sure. Man, I almost got big. I almost got real loose. Oh yeah, man.
Yeah, he did too.
Hit you up with Paul.
Yeah,
text
but yeah. So, but
Chris Evans, it's all.
Yeah.
Whoa.
There's your tweet.
What can you give us?
I mean, it's stars Anthony Mackie, Stephanie Beatrix.
Ooh.
Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah, you on, bro.
My guy Mike Mitchell, the homie, hilarious dude. Taj Vaughn, another cool cat. Anyways, Twisted Metal, like the PlayStation game of old.
Yes, sir.
A lot of crazy car mayhem. I play Sweet Tooth.
The
Needles Kane, the infamous one. So,
I can't wait. I heard about that rumor, and I was like, I can't wait.
Get to do some pretty cool stuff, and hopefully, in the coming months, y'all find out more about it.
Yes, sir.
I think I did good.
That was good.
I think I stayed NDA well.
I'll be remiss, too, because this is my brother. This is my guy, and I know y'all tight. And Swerve was just on his podcast, and I was on his podcast, so I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up DNA. That's my brother. I know that's your man.
Great.
You guys always, he always shouts you out every time I talk to him. And tell me a little bit about that relationship real quick. How you got into the battle?
Battle rap's a lot of fun. Great time to watch, especially on the road. And you're in between flights and there's quick clips. You know, like I used to watch Smack and URL stuff. Just tune in real quick and check it out. And watching DNA and stuff. And then I think I made a tweet like making light of a Don DeMarco Don DeMarco hit. Just I said something like that, and then DNA hit me. Oh, you like battle rap? I was like, yeah. I started chatting a little bit about it, talking about stuff, and then anytime I'm rolling through New York or whatever, try to have dude out and all his boys and shit. And it's cool, man. You know, I mean, it's just stuff I enjoy.
Oh, so
man.
You met Warren?
Yeah.
Okay. King. I appreciate you, King.
Just to let you know, he's proud of you.
Yeah.
He's very proud of brother. What you're doing. He's very proud of you.
Brother, come with mad love and respect. I give him
that. Shout out to Warren, baby. All jokes.
Heart of gold.
All jokes, baby. So give me a quick top three. Who you like?
I think I told him, I dig DNA. I like Charlie Clips, like his delivery and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Pretty.
You know, cool cat. Mook's always wild with, you know, whatever he hits and when he goes in. There are a lot of dudes, man. You know, I like I said, I started out kind of old Smack URL. I know there's a lot of new cats and stuff. And, occasionally.
He's, like, he's watching when they was in the street. And all
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
me
yeah,
too,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah.
That's what I was on the street yelling at each other.
I mean, I actually, shout out to Homicide. I remember some of the first Smack DVDs I got. He pulled off the Philly streets, gave to me.
Wow.
So yeah, it was way back in the day. Yeah,
that's what's up, man. I'll be talking to a lot of people about it, and then when I found out you was a fan, I was like, it helps me creatively, musically.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, yo, that was some creative stuff to say. I like that. I like that. And also too, one thing that's also I wanted to know as a fan as well is like, if what was your first reaction when you saw yourself in a video game for the first time? Because that is something that one of the fans, I took a question from the fans.
I spent a gang of money because it was a Japanese game. So I had to get the game. I had to get the import PlayStation so I could play that shit. And then I had to like figure out a dumbass way to not discreetly like just all of a sudden have this Japanese wrestling game on. And Oh, damn. Oh. You see that shit? Oh, it's this game I was just put. I got it in Japan. I guess I'm in it. I don't know how that works. You know, like, my boy's like, nah, this motherfucker. But yeah, it was King of the Colosseum. King of Colosseum. Yeah, something like that.
So, of course, you make yourself champion, right?
Oh, yeah, immediately.
Oh, okay, cool. Okay,
well,
cool,
first, man. I had to, like, learn how to get the translation. Because this is back in the day before stuff was easy to figure out, you know, like, so I had to get the whole guide translation and figure out how to play the game and stuff, but, Yeah,
shortly thereafter, we were options and stuff.
Oh, yeah, get the timing system.
Was a squiggly line over here.
Yeah.
How do you fight for a championship? What's that thing? Yeah. Wow, that's what's up.
Like, oh, they put me in a death match. Oh, that's not what I wanted.
Yeah, I remember my brothers were over, and, like, you know, they always wanted to play, like, NBA Jam or Madden. And I remember it was like I had it on. Like, what are you playing, man? You know? my brother's like, turn that shit off, man. Put Madden on.
No, that's what I used to get. Cause I created like 30 some people on them wrestling games back in the day.
You used to?
Yeah. Oh my god, I went ham.
On the memory cards, bro. Take up all the space.
Like, why is there a whole gig?
And I'm the kind of person too. I'm so damn detailed. I can't just have a basic entrance.
No,
I need like step by stage. I need fireworks at this part. Like. Why am I doing this?
They're like, insert a second. Yeah, you had to insert a second memory card just to get it all on.
I'll be so upset. I'm like, the camera didn't cut right now. I needed it to cut. It needs to be hard cam opposite. Dang.
I was telling my son, like, you don't know the days when your memory card was corrupted. You had to leave the PS on all day. Because you wanted to play Tony Hawk 2 and you had to beat the level and you was not going back. Mm-mm. They don't know about them days.
Yeah, have a password.
Who turned it off?
Come on, turn the grandma. Like, I turned it off. Like, no!
I was just coming in vacuuming, and you had that heart just blowing super hard.
I just got the 6 score, and you turned it up. Man, I used to be so tight.
I was in this level of Metal Gear. I was so deep. I ain't trying to go back. I ain't trying to fight Manus again.
Bring, bring, bring. Oh, that's not the beginning. It's the beginning. Damn.
Well, yo, it's been great, bro. We about to wrap it up, man. Right, it's been an unbelievable conversation. It's been hilarious. You know, we do what we do here in the Swerve City Podcast. We make you laugh. Hopefully you learned some from, you know, Samoa Joe the legend here, Ring of Honor, television champion. I hope you get motivated to get up and do something that you didn't think you could possibly do, hearing our stories, hearing our mans, and listen to some music. Matter of fact, listen to Teezy's music.
Listen to his music, too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Lifeline on all digital platforms right now with Anthony King. I mean, make sure you listen to the music, and I look forward to passing some stuff to Joe and have him listen to some stuff. We got some stuff cooking, and, you know, maybe he can pop in the music video someday. You know, yeah. He's on Twitter.
I will ghost ride a whip. I'll let y'all know that right
that's
now. Yeah,
I'm
just saying.
About, but hey, man, he on Twisted Metal now, bro. That's a different bag there, bro.
Whips before.
That's what I'm talking about, bro. We currently watching the Cowboys.
Now, y'all got to get that thing really insured, because I say I was good at it. I just say I'll ghost ride that bitch until we hit that tree. You know what I'm saying?
Trust me, it'll be a sponsored video.
Sponsored, brother.
That ain't in my pocket.
Big Al's Collisions.
But yeah, Samoa Joe, thank you very much.
Appreciate
bro.
Y'all.
Be confident in everything you do, everybody.
Wash your ass.
Do your homework. Cowboys gonna lose this game.
Oh, shit, they are.